This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today, one candidate for Congress and another for State House. Coming up, Republican Beth Griffin is running for State House in the district that includes Van Buren County and Northwest Kalamazoo County. But first, Paul Clements ran for Congress 2 years ago in the 6th Congressional District. This year, he is once again the Democratic candidate in the southwest corner of Michigan. He's running for the seat which is currently held by Republican Fred Upton. Paul Clements, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Gordon. Nice to be back.
Please reintroduce yourself to the audience. Tell them about yourself.
Sure. Well, Gordon, you know, I'm Paul Clements. I'm a professor here at Western. I teach national economic development here. I've been here for 20 years. My wife is a librarian. Our two daughters went to Kalamazoo Central. We've been very active in our church and in the community for many years. And I was born in Texas, but I grew up mostly in Hong Kong and India. My mom and dad were Methodist missionaries. My dad was a social worker, so they did economic and social development with the refugees coming out of China in Bombay, in the slums of Bombay, and in villages in India. Like when I was in high school in New Delhi, I spent most of my holidays either in these village slum projects or in village development projects or in the slums where my mom and dad were working. And that was kind of where I got my first understanding of service as part of, you know, who I am, part of my vocation. I was fortunate to get a scholarship to Harvard, also work my way through for living expenses. And then I went on to the U.S. Peace Corps. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the Gambia in West Africa, a math teacher. I met my wife there. Our first daughter was born there. Went back and got my master's and PhD at Princeton in their public affairs program, which is both economics and political science, focusing on how you get government to work more effectively for the people. In 1996, I got my PhD and came to Kalamazoo, got a job here at Western. I've been here since those times, and it's been 20 wonderful years.
What would you like to do then if you are elected to Congress?
Well, you know, I teach economic development, and I look around at our country, and it seems to me that the biggest challenge we face right now is we've got an economy that's working pretty well for the big corporations, it's working for the millionaires, but it's not working for most Americans. And we certainly see that here in the district, whether we're talking about, you know, here in the United States, we have the highest child poverty of any industrial country except Romania. Here in the district, we have 20% of our kids who go to school hungry sometime during the year. Here at Western, we see so many of our students graduating with enormous debt, and they can't get their lives started because of that. But, you know, even people who have jobs, we've seen jobs kind of coming back after the Depression, recession, finally. But the median wage is still below what it was back in the year 2000. Now, we've had 35 years of pretty good economic growth, but almost all the benefits of that growth have gone to the very few at the top. In the last 15 years, all the benefits have gone to the few at the top. The median, the average has actually gone down. And that's just not right. And where the problem is, you know, the central problem really is with our Congress, both in terms of how it's been bought out by enormous campaign contributions, and there are so many tax subsidies, tax loopholes, ways that the economy is rigged in favor of the big corporations, and also in terms of it's not doing the kind of things that we need to do to build a broad and inclusive economy. So those are the key things where I'm running and that I intend to work on in Congress.
Okay, so how would you unrig the tax system in such a way so that the benefits are more spread out across different points on the economic spectrum?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of pieces to that puzzle. But, you know, the first thing is that there have been so many tax loopholes and tax subsidies written into our tax code. It's thousands of pages long. We just need to clear those out. And that you know, will take care of a big part of the problem.
A simplified tax code, you think?
Simplified, but, you know, for example, my opponent, Fred Upton, has voted for enormous subsidies for the oil and gas industry, which, you know, they're making enormous profits. We just don't need that. But there's the carried interest deduction that allowed Mitt Romney to pay 15% tax on most of his millions, which, you know, is just wrong. We still subsidize companies for moving their production overseas. We allow companies to make their money here in the United States and then park their headquarters somewhere else and avoid paying tax on it. And that's not right. So there's a whole range of specific tasks, but there's also things like, you know, why are medicines cost so much? This is how the system gets rigged. You know, Fred Upton, he talks a lot about health care, but he's one of the people who voted so Medicare can't negotiate drug prices with our pharmaceutical companies. He pushed so we can't import generic drugs from Canada. And these are some of the biggest reasons that our drug prices are so much higher than they are in most countries, in every other country around the world.
Do you favor any additional limitations on trade, something that the Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has been talking about?
You know, trade has been a big issue in this campaign, obviously nationally, and a lot of the discussion is around the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that's something that I'm opposed to, as is Donald Trump and as is Hillary Clinton. Now, it's interesting, Fred Upton just came out last week saying he's also opposed to it, which I was a little surprised at since he's supported every free trade, every trade agreement in the last 20 years. And he's already voted twice in favor of the Trans-Pacific Partnership in terms of pushing for fast track. But I'll tell you, and again, it's not that we want to go back to the kind of protectionism that got us into the Great Depression. The problem is that, and I teach economic development, our trade partners, we see our government working with business. And in Europe, in Germany, in France, Sweden, Austria, government worked with business and with labor to see which are the growing sectors, which are the sectors with increasing world demand, and then how do they build the economy so that those sectors are growing. So we have the educated workforce, the advanced technology, the clean, easy regulatory structure, and then the trade piece is also a piece of that. So we want to build our trade relations so that those sectors of the economy that are likely to grow in the future are growing here because, you know, just in the 21st century, just like the 20th century, we need to be making things that the world needs. It's still going to be through production, making things that you get good middle-class jobs. That's going to be the basis of an economy. And our Congress and our government has frankly been neglecting that. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership and NAFTA, these pay no attention to these issues. Another side of it is that people lose their jobs when you have these free trade agreements. And there were some tiny provisions to give support to those, but they just haven't worked. The estimates indicate that if TPP were to pass, we would lose almost 6,000 manufacturing jobs here in Southwest Michigan. And that's not right, here in the 6th District.
So you're opposed to TPP. Would you go back and undo NAFTA or renegotiate it if given that opportunity?
You know, when you've got something which has been in place for so many years, going back and renegotiating, if you want something, you have to probably have to give something up. Yes, I do think there's room to improve it. It's kind of hard when something's been in place for a long time just to start from, you can't go back to square one.
One of the things you mentioned on your website is quality preschool. How would you expand that in the United States and how would you pay for it?
Well, that's a very good point. You know, one thing we know now for sure is that learning begins at day one and that good quality preschool pays for itself 8 to 15 times over in terms of better wages, in terms of reduced juvenile and adult crime down the road. It just makes sense for young children to start off with a very strong foundation. It's also not that expensive. You know, I mean, the big challenge would really be training the good quality preschool teachers. And that's why it's something you can't just say, we're gonna move from today to tomorrow to universal access to good quality preschool. We need to go there, but the challenge will be to set up the institutions to work with local communities, to train the teachers so we can provide it. In terms of paying for it, it's a tiny proportion of the you know, again, if we fix the broken tax system, it'll be 2 or 3% max that need to go into paying preschool teachers.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Paul Clements. He is the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 6th Congressional District, currently represented by Republican Fred Upton. Let me ask you a little bit about foreign policy. There's a lot of areas of the world we could talk about, so I'm going to try to boil this down to a fairly simple philosophical question. And,
sure.
And what is vital interest of the United States, and when would you say that that interest merits some sort of military action?
You know, I'm on record as having been opposed to the invasion of Iraq. That turned out to be on false information. I think we should be extraordinarily cautious in when we use our military forces abroad. I think that in terms of the current issues in Syria, that it's really a mess over there. That's no news to anyone. But if we look at the experience in Afghanistan, if we look at the experience in Iraq, that sending the army in to our military forces on the ground in to try to, you know, bring democracy or fix problems in foreign countries, that so often it just doesn't work. That the general philosophical approach I take is that it usually is going to be the local people or the people in the region who are going to need to solve their own problems. We need to support them. We need to be providing a strong example of democracy. If they're, you know, someone like Osama bin Laden, of course we need to go after Osama bin Laden. If someone who directly attacks us on American soil, then they're our enemy. There's no question about that. But in terms of, you know, it's a tough world out there. We want to work with our allies, work with friends to try to encourage the development of economies, of democracies. But from a sort of a, I don't know, sort of a bottom up, that if they can't solve their, you know, Syria, it's a terrible problem. There are millions of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who have died. There's millions of refugees. I don't want to underestimate that, but it doesn't present a significant, an existential threat to the United States in any way, shape, or form.
Does there ever reach a point where a humanitarian crisis gets so bad that you say maybe there is not a direct threat to United States interests? There's no reason to believe the United States is going to be attacked, but the sheer number of people who have, you know, been killed or injured or are having to flee their homes means that the United States, with the largest military in the world, has to act.
I do think that you sometimes cross that line, and I would say that the Rwandan genocide provides an example of that. That, you know, we do have these cases where one people in a country turn on another people and literally try to kill them off. And that's just so terrible. We can't accept these extreme violations of human rights. But it also has to be something where you see a clear pathway to, you know, how you get in and how you get out. And in Syria, for example, you know, the Assad government has been a pretty awful government in a lot of ways. But it looks as though, from a strategic perspective, that, you know, he might be around for some time to come. And it might be that we need to accept that and, again, work with the neighbors in the region to say, how do we establish peace and security for the majority of people there, stem the refugee tide, and stop the killing?
How expensive do you expect this race to be? A lot of money on both sides?
You know that my opponent, Fred Upton, he's one of the top recipients of out-of-state corporate PAC contributions in the U.S. Congress. He's going to spend more than I am, but I'm proud to say that our campaign tens of thousands of contributors, I think over 2,000 contributors at this point, overwhelmingly from within the district, overwhelmingly from individuals, that we have broken the record for Democratic fundraising in the district. We are competitive with Mr. Upton on television. And we're running a very strong campaign, and I'm cautiously optimistic that the voters will see that Mr. Upton is not representing their interests.
But I think if I went back and listened to the interview 2 years ago, you said the same thing, that you were cautiously optimistic and you got a little more than 40% of the vote. Do you see anything that tells you that 2016 is different than 2014?
Well, for one thing, it's a presidential year, and we know that the turnout in a presidential year tends to be 50% higher. Secondly is, you know, when you do something once, you learn something, you know, and having had the experience, last time was my first time to run for public office, and every part of our campaign is just better, stronger than what we had 2 years ago. I've focusing more on just the economic insecurity that so many of our people face and how it really stems from an economy that's rigged, from a Congress that's broken. And I think that people are really picking up on that as where the country is. And this is really the core issue that our government needs to be addressing. So that encourages me. And then I will mention that, you know, just in an election that often the top of the ticket has a significant influence. And Donald Trump happens to be extraordinarily unpopular in our district. And that might help me.
Paul Clements, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Paul Clements is the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 6th Congressional District. He is running for the seat in Southwest Michigan, which is currently held by Republican Fred Upton. An interview with Republican Congressman Fred Upton has been scheduled for later this month. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new state representative in Van Buren and Northwest Kalamazoo County next year. The current representative, Eric Nesbitt, cannot run again in the 66th House District because of term limits. Beth Griffin won the Republican primary for the seat in August. Beth Griffin, thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Please reintroduce yourself to our audience. Tell us about yourself.
Well, my name is Beth Griffin, and I am the Republican candidate for the 66th District House race. And I'm hard at work every day listening to what people have to say so that I can be a great representative. I am married to Greg. We've been married for 23 years, and he is a naval reservist and is rolling out of the Navy in November, just this next month. So that'll be a change for us. But I also have two kids, and they are in 6th and 7th grade at Mattawan Middle School, and I'm personally excited about that because I'm a middle school teacher, so it's a wild, it's a wild and crazy time for my kids, but one that I'm super excited about because I just love to see them maturing and growing and having a good time with the teachers there in the middle school. And then I am still guest teaching a little bit on the side at Mattawan Schools because, of course, I'm a teacher. But my teaching background is I spent 6 years in the classroom at Parchment Middle School in 6th grade special ed and in 8th grade English. And so it continues to be a passion of mine. Education is very important and near and dear to my heart. And my current job is that I'm a county commissioner. So I've been doing, I've been representing Antwerp Township as a county commissioner now for 4 years. And have discovered that community service is not just a volunteer pastime of mine, but it's also a career path and something I've chosen to do.
What would you like to do if you are elected to the State House?
Well, I have a few things that I'm focused on and things that are important to me. But first, let me say that the reason that I started this, the reason that I am running, is because when my kids were born, I realized that as a new mom, I understood how to keep them warm and how to feed them. But what I didn't understand as a taxpayer and as a voter at that time, and I've always been a conservative, but I didn't understand how to teach them to be good citizens. And so I began reading and I began researching and volunteering in the community. And through time, through showing my kids what it means to be a good citizen and walking that, and by my actions, I've been showing my kids what I expect of them. And it's helped me be a better person, a better voter, and now it'll help me be a better representative. What I've learned as a county commissioner is that it is very important to focus on the economy, because if businesses are growing, families are able to stay in the area because they have employment, and then the schools have great enrollment because the families are there. And I think that it's all related. As a teacher, I understand that. As a parent, I understand that. And as an advocate for business, I also understand that. So I'm just really excited to approach it from that perspective. And I do think that there are many layers to being a representative. And as a local county official, I do understand that. But what's important is that it really does boil down to the fact that we need to keep Southwest Mission a great place to live. And for me, it's very personal because I want my kids to stay here. I want them to be here. And when I'm old, I want them to take care of me and have a great job so that they stay near me and don't move away.
You mentioned on your website low taxes. Do you want to cut taxes from where they are right now?
Currently, because I'm not in Lansing yet, what I'd like to do is when I get up there is take a look at what's been done. And I do think that as a local official, I've learned that tax dollars pay for certain services. Locally, we understand that. And so to go up there and say, well, I'm going to start robbing from the rainy day fund, or I'm going to start changing this or that, or I'm going to do, I think that that's short-sighted. As a local official, I understand that, for example, rainy day funds are there for a specific reason. We don't want to go back to the lost decade of the Granholm days. And it would be fiscally irresponsible of anyone and sends the wrong signal to the bond markets if Michigan is using its savings account to pay for programs and services. Michigan has improved its credit rating in recent years, which helps all of our local governments and our local schools. So I think that we need to be very careful and cognizant of the fact that, you know, in January, we're going to have 30 to 40 new legislators coming in, making some big efforts to bone up on the issues, to learn what's going on. And I think part of that process is respecting the fact that there's been a lot of hard work that's happened before us. And yes, we're building on past successes, but we also need to take that time to really get a lay of the land before we just start saying, you know, less cut from one fund or another. I think it's short-sighted to do that.
Do you believe that the state has underfunded local governments? There was a lawsuit filed not so long ago that says that local governments are not getting what they should be getting from the state.
As a county commissioner, it takes a lot of hard work and coordination and oversight to maintain a balanced budget and a healthy budget locally. And I can honestly say after 4 years, I've seen the process in my county, in Van Buren County. I'm very proud to say we have balanced a budget and we are very healthy. We have a savings account. We have, you know, we're paying our bills. We're investing. We're taking care of business. What concerns me is that at the same time that there are stressors, there are budget stressors in Lansing, that there continue to be budget stressors in Pawpaw, in Van Buren County, and in Southwest Michigan. Will those stressors ever go away? No. And, you know, when Lansing makes decisions that affect local entities like counties, there is going to be that back and forth, that pressure between, okay, if you change a law, give us the money to help pay for that. And if they do that, that's fine. But most of the time, when a change comes or when a new, what we call an unfunded mandate, comes down from Lansing, there's not money attached to that. And so all of our best budgeting efforts and planning and oversight and you know, careful attention to detail is changed because we have a new law, but yet we don't have the money to go buy that. And as an elected official locally, I can take that to Lansing and be involved in the process because I understand the layered nature of how different pots of money pay for different things. And to be able to say as a county commissioner, I can walk into that conversation with when potential bills come, I can say, wait a minute, you know, do you understand how this is going to affect local entities? I've been there. This is what's going to happen. And where's the money to pay for that? I think I could be a positive advocate for at least more robust dialogue before unfunded mandates come down. And I absolutely will be doing that.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Beth Griffin. She is the Republican candidate for state representative in the 66th State House District, which includes all of Van Buren County, as well as Northwest Kalamazoo County. Would you support reforms to the current system for auto insurance in Michigan?
Absolutely. I learned first about concerns with auto insurance when I was on the doors talking to seniors. And it's a concern for families as well, especially low-income families. But it is really scary when I am in a conversation with an older gentleman and he says, you know, I have to choose between paying my auto insurance and buying groceries. So I've done some research into the issue, and what I've found is something that's very shocking, and I'll just a quick story. First of all, auto insurance is more expensive in Michigan than any other state around us. Why? That's ridiculous. Why are we incentivizing people to go to Indiana to buy auto insurance? Well, here's one reason. Right now, someone's in a car accident, they go to the ER, they have suspected head injury, so they get an MRI to see what's wrong. That MRI costs three times as much as an MRI for, let's say, someone who comes in that fell off a ladder. Why? It makes no sense to me. As a parent, as a local official, I just don't understand how that works. And in the face of the fact that auto insurance is so hugely expensive and how much it stresses the vulnerable populations, we absolutely owe it to them. They're the ones that are paying our paychecks when we go to Lansing. So we need to listen to what they're saying, and they're saying that it's too expensive. And so that means that that it is our job to look at how we can trim those costs. And I'm not saying to take money away from the people that are catastrophically injured. What I am saying is that there are costs that are the cost of an auto injury bill versus someone who fell off a ladder, identical MRIs. Those bills should be similar, and they're not. And it's just it doesn't smell right to me.
So, but you did say there that you would not take money away from someone catastrophically injured. Michigan has a very unique system which allows for lifetime benefits for someone who has been seriously injured in an auto accident. You saying you would not change that?
I'm saying that I've done some initial research into that, and I recognize that there are people that absolutely need that. I have not delved real deeply into the numbers behind that, but right now, I'm focused on the fact that the costs are so different for treatment. That's where I'm looking right now. So, you know, granted, it would be my job as a legislator to, you know, when I'm in Lansing, to look at all sides, and absolutely I will. Because again, that's the job of a legislator. You look at all sides equally and you collaborate. But for right now, my focus is on the fact that the costs are so hugely different. It's just a big red flag to me.
The Michigan Democratic Party filed a campaign finance complaint about your use of a government email account, which they said was used for campaign purposes at times. What's your response?
Thank you for asking the question. I really appreciate the chance to respond to that. I check work emails along with my personal emails on a personal phone so that I can work after hours, and I should have been more careful. Because campaign laws are so complicated, I am looking into this. I will make it right. But right now in my conversations with people on the doors and as I talk to businesses and as I walk farms and as I walk down the streets and see empty storefronts in every town, I am hearing that people want to focus about getting more and better jobs in our community, about keeping taxes low, and about supporting education and also supporting quality health care. So that's what I'm focused on right now.
Do you think that there is too much money in politics, and does it have too much influence over policy?
Absolutely. I think it's completely ridiculous that to run for office, you have to raise a lot of money. And when I decided to go into community service, that was a really big hurdle for me to come to terms with. It bothers me and concerns me that as I try to keep a positive message working together for a better Michigan, that, you know, the reality is I have to raise money in order to help get my message out. When my opponent talks about getting donations, though, I find it really interesting that that she talks about my donations when in 2014 and in 2016, she's received thousands of dollars from groups as well. And I just, again, I want to keep things positive, but I want to keep also things realistic. And the fact is, right now, yes, we have campaign finance laws that we can play with, but it costs a lot of money to run a campaign. And I'm absolutely dedicated to getting my message out that working together for a better Michigan, and that my experience on the ground as a county commissioner and as a teacher and as a community servant, that I will be able to serve the 66th district well.
But you say it's not a good thing that you have to raise that much money to run a campaign.
I think it's ridiculous.
So what do we do about it?
You know what? I'm in the middle of a campaign right now, so I'm not sure what I can do about that today.
But if you're elected, I mean,
I really do look forward to continued dialogue on that, because I know a lot of really good-hearted people that would be great in public service. And the barrier is money. And I just don't think that's right.
Beth Griffin, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Beth Griffin is the Republican candidate for State House in the 66th District. That includes all of Van Buren, as well as Northwest Kalamazoo County. An interview with the Democratic candidate in the 66th State House District, Annie Brown, aired in September. You can find a link at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.